to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the English Express Radio Podcast. Visit us online at theenglishexpress.com. Audio files will be available after the show, where you can download and listen anytime on your computer, mobile device, or join us live every week to practice English with real Americans speaking real English. All aboard the English Express.
Able to join us today. He has explosive diarrhea. I apologize.
I'm right here.
Welcome back. Sorry.
Did you prep that? I'm all like, first, I barely hear you in the background, and I'm like, what on earth is going on? I thought there was background. Then I'm hearing you saying that you're the host, and I'm like, dude, I'm right here. When's the last time you went on a date?
Define date.
Like a date, not a date with your girlfriend. I'm like a first date.
God. I don't know if I've ever been on a real date.
Come on. You've never been on a real date?
I've been dating my wife since I was a teenager.
Oh, okay.
So by the time it was like time to go out and date people, we're pretty much like married. You know, we had like a kid. And so dates were like, let's go out to dinner. That's not really a date, right?
Okay, so you've never been on a bad date?
No, not really.
Well, first I want to welcome people to the show. I can't forget that.
Oh, I did that already. Welcome.
Yeah, well, go visit us at theenglishexpress.com. You can write us emails, info@theenglishexpress.com. We also have all of the audio files posted there. And you know what? Pretty soon we're going to have some new changes because I am moving into a new home, which I just purchased. And so I'm setting up. Yeah. Isn't that exciting? I'm so excited about that. Well, I'm setting up the new studio. I'm going to have like, you know, a really cool setup so that I can do videos again and stuff like that. So we're going to have some new stuff coming in. So get ready.
Good Lord. I hope we get some good internet so I stop having to deal with this lag.
I am. I'm going to have everything set up, hardwired in. The internet's going to be perfect. We're going to start doing new YouTube videos again and a whole bunch of stuff coming up really soon for the English Express Radio Podcast. So check us out online, theenglishexpress.com. Now, most people have been on bad dates. I've been on a lot of bad dates because I was my standards were, are you pretty? Let's go out.
Yeah, I'm sure that a lot of your dates would probably say the same thing about you.
No, nobody would ever say that about me. I had great dates. I was the great date. I was like the reason the date was good, and it was quite sad, but. Well, no, I can't say that because I remember one time I went to a soccer game in Salt Lake City, the Real Salt Lake, and and I went with my buddies, and I had this girl with me, and she went to the bathroom and never came back.
Oh no! What did you do?
I don't know. We met at our house and, you know, drove out there. She obviously had somebody else come pick her up because after a while I'm like, is she ever going to come back from the bathroom? And I'm like, she ain't coming back from the bathroom.
Now, are you sure she wasn't abducted? I mean, did you ever check the missing persons cases after that?
I did not. I just assumed that she left. I hope she wasn't abducted. Look, it was a first date.
She's still in somebody's trunk wondering where you are, still hoping you'll come from the stadium.
Oh, my gosh. No, I think she probably just bailed on me. Well, Cosmo Magazine has their four best ways to bail on a date. Number one, lie right away. You what?
I hate these things. It's like, let me teach you how to be a dirtbag.
Well, their first example is lie right away.
Lie right away.
If it's instantly obvious that things are tanking, I like how they phrase this. Tell your escort that you've got an urgent phone call just as you're walking out the door to meet him, and you can only stay for one drink. So, you know, I didn't want to stand you up, but I can really only stay for like a moment, one drink. I got to go. You know, I work at the hospital. I thought you worked at the florist shop. Yeah, the florist shop and the hospital. And
I moonlight.
They really, really need me down at the office, you know, at the office.
Hospital office.
Well, you know, the military police, they don't take care of themselves. You're in the military.
Didn't I mention it's the VA?
Yeah, so lie immediately. Don't drag it out, okay? Their second suggestion, lie halfway through.
All right, I see a theme.
If things get really dull or take a sudden turn for the worse and half the night is still ahead of you, shorten the date by inventing a morning appointment or a huge work project that prevents you from staying. Tell him, ooh, unfortunately, I've got to make it an early one tonight. You know, they're waiting for that big presentation at 7 a.m.
You know what might be more fun? And this might be a way to test the other person to see just how cool or terrible they really are. Just lean over the table at them and be like, so I'm trying to think of a lie to get out of this date, but I'm having a hard time. And I was wondering if you could help me. Do you think it's more believable if I tell you I'm a veterinarian or a plumber? And like, you know, spitball with them and see if they got a sense of humor. Hey, you might make a good friend out of the whole deal.
Oh my God. Well, look, I know what they're talking about. I've gone out on dates where there was this one girl. She was a caterer where did she work? I don't know, but she was a caterer. And when I first met her, my first impression was, how does this girl not have a boyfriend? Because she was flat out gorgeous. I mean, she was a beautiful girl. And she was telling me she's only had like two boyfriends in her whole life. And she was like 27. And I'm like, how does a girl like this not have a boyfriend or only have two boyfriends in her whole life? And for most of the time, she's single. It's not like she had like long-term boyfriends. Yeah. After I went out on a date with her, I knew exactly why she didn't have a date, because
she has two tongues.
No, she was just boring as hell. The whole night I was trying to, pulling answers out of her was like pulling teeth. And I would ask a question, she'd be like, uh-huh. And I'm like, anything else to add to that story that I was telling? And she goes, no, keep going. And I'm like, come on, sweetheart, you got to give me a little bit of give and take here. There was no give and take. And I wanted to help her out because when I was talking with her before we went on the date, she's like, I just don't understand it. And I'm like, get some hobbies, sweetie, because this is bad. And I just never called her again, ever again after that. She called me a few times and I'm like, voicemail. And I meant to talk to her, but I just didn't.
You know, and there's little tricks I've learned which sound kind of counterintuitive, but if you ask them questions that you know the answer will be no, they're actually more people are more inclined to start talking.
Really?
Yeah. Usually you would think you would want to say something to their interests and try to get them talking about something they like. So you would ask an easy question that gets them saying yes and blah, blah, blah. You hear that a lot. But if you do the exact opposite and go completely off the rails and give them a question that they have no choice but to say no to, it gets them out of their place of comfort. They're no longer able to just go along to get along. Yes, yes, yes. Now they have to think about something. It shakes them up and you can start a better conversation.
Okay. I thought about cutting the date short, just like this suggests, but I got to be honest, I was still hoping for a kiss at the end.
I'm sure you were hoping for a little more than that.
I was hoping for a kiss. That's all I wanted. Because I don't want to lead this girl on, but kiss would have made me happy. But by the end of the date, I wasn't even feeling that, so I didn't even try.
That's so sad.
But that's what I was kind of hoping for. I'm like, well, she's still hot, you know? But I didn't know how to broach that subject, because how do you go from a terrible date into, Kiss for the Road. So
I mean, maybe just, I would, never mind. I'm not even going to say it. I take it back.
All right. Their third choice, third suggestion is be blunt. If it comes out in conversation that he lives for the weekend camping and you're more of a mall and movie girl, admit as much. Say, look, it was really fun meeting you, but I don't think this is working out. Do you mind if we call it a night? He might be relieved. I would have been relieved if she just said.
That's to me, that's the best advice, is just tell the truth and level with the person. I mean, if you start talking about how you really want abortions to be a thing and how I really want, you know, women to have the right to choose their body, you know, make choices for their own body. And then you turn around and see a Donald Trump sticker on his Jeep, you know, like, oh, maybe this isn't going to work out. Yeah, admit that early on. Move on.
I would be like, this is great first date conversation, abortion talk. Why would you even bring that up on the first date? So, how do you feel about abortion?
That's something I ask. It's on my checklist for my first date procedures. Luckily, I haven't had to use it in a while, so that's good.
And last, run. Just renounce tact if Mr. Wrong gets rude or crude. You don't have to take it from the guy you barely know. Mumble and run for the door.
Yikes.
That's probably what happened to me in Salt Lake at the soccer game.
I still want to know what you were doing to make her do that. I wonder if you were just completely ignoring her and she flat out told you, okay, I'm going to leave now. I'm going to go. And you're like, okay, have fun in the bathroom. Like, you have no idea.
Hey, look, you know what? Honestly, when I was with my buddies, because there's like five of us all together and we were laughing and joking, she probably felt left out. But I'm like, hey, when you're hanging out with your friends, I mean, you said you wanted to come. I said we're going with our friends. And she's like, you know, this guy's just busy hanging out with his friends. Is this going to be what it's like all the time? And she bounced. You
know, I hate girls like that. I don't hate, but girls like that frustrate me because it's like, you know, you have a mouth, right? You can jump in the fun and join in with us, and you don't have to be a bump on a log.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Join in, be a part of things.
Let's have some fun together. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you can be one of my friends too.
You would think so, but anyway, maybe it was best she just ran out. Are you rich?
Not by any stretch of the imagination.
Are you ever going to be rich?
Yes. Yes, I am.
How are you going to get rich?
Define rich. I'm never going to be able to purchase a yacht, nor would I want to.
I would. Have you ever seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
Never.
Okay, I want to be just like that guy.
Well, I heard that guy was awful.
He was, but he had a great boat. He used to throw money around like it was like no tomorrow. That's like, look, it's not a good life. It's not even, it's not a good life, but you got to admit, it's fun. You're going straight to hell if you live his life, but at least you'd go there in style.
It seems fun. It seems fun, but I know that I would basically kill myself if I had that kind of money.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Look, I honestly, telling the truth here, if I had that kind of money, I would continue working. I would not live that kind of life, only in my dreams, because that's when you just go like, to have no cares in the world and just take your life and crumble it up in a little ball and just throw it away. Throw your life straight down the toilet, but you can look around and say, hey, at least I did it in style.
In a glorious ball of flames.
No, I can't do that. I'm too practical.
If I ran across, you know, say $100 billion for some reason, I just had some ungodly amount of money, I'm going to have a helicopter, a private jet, and a sports car within the first 7 days. Okay.
Within the first seven hours.
I'm killing myself in one of those three things, at least in the next 5 years. Okay. That's going to happen.
Well,
so
we've got a self-made millionaire named Steve Siebold, and he's got his top reasons why you will never be rich.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Folks who put too much emphasis on saving and not enough on earning. You know these people. Every time they turn around, they're saving, saving, saving. And I say, why don't you just make more money? If you make more money, you don't have to worry so much about saving. You can still save. I'm not saying that saving isn't important, but if all your focus is on saving, you're not concerned about how do I make more money? And a lot of times making more money is important. You need to spend to make more money, depending on the situation.
Yeah, you take your savings that you're building up and you invest it in a money-making opportunity that has, you know, you hopefully balance out a low risk with a high reward and go for it. But the problem with that, and I think what freaks most people out from going forward with it, is that risk part. You know, if you put your money into making money for you, you have a chance to lose it.
Yeah, that goes down to you rarely step outside of your comfort zone. If you want to build wealth, be successful, or get ahead in life, you have to get used to uncertainty or risk. Rich people in particular find comfort in uncertainty. When things get really stressful, you're really unsure, how is this going to turn out? And boom, it works out in the end. It gives you this like rush of adrenaline. I have felt it in my life, and it's great. To say, I had no idea how it was going to turn out. I had absolutely like 50 opportunities to be a complete failure. And I had 4 opportunities to be a success. And I succeeded. And I'm like, in your face. I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take that, universe.
Yeah. And it's exciting.
I wonder if it's that stress level, that survival instinct that makes you feel like, okay, you know, basically when your back's up against the wall and you're really uncertain of how it's going to turn out, it drives you to make that success rather than you sit by and let happenstance create it for you. You drive the success when you're in that state.
Yeah. And I've been in those situations where you put it all on the line and you're like, please, 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 please. You've done everything you can do. You've covered every angle. And you're like, this is my shot. And then it works. And you just, oh, euphoric. Absolutely euphoric. I love that feeling.
Now, the other thing is you got to be ready for the failure, because failures happen as well. And you have to know how to take that, learn from it, and reattack.
You have to have a plan. Yeah, you have to have a plan. And your fallback, what's going to happen if this goes south? Because sometimes it does. And it has for me many a times. And you got to bounce back. And people who are risk takers, they always have a backup plan. I certainly do.
And you just have to know that if you take enough risk, some of them aren't going to pay out, but a lot of them will.
That's right. That's right. And my buddy Dave would agree with this one. You haven't started investing yet. Now, saving money is all well and good, but if you're not investing, you're probably not moving ahead. Now, this is not the kind of investing that your rookie football player gets involved in. I'm going to start my own record label.
Oh, no.
Hey, that's not investing. I'm going to invest in my own line of perfumes. Yet, not going to work. You don't have the star power to push your own line.
What about investing in like linens and things?
Linens?
Linens and things. It's a company. Linens and things.
Look, I have a basic.
What about Johnson & Johnson? Can I invest in Johnson & Johnson? Is that investing?
It is. You buy stock. Okay. And I have a basic rule in my investing. If a company makes a thing and that thing is good, invest because people will always need it. It makes a thing and that thing is good. It's a good bet. Okay.
I feel like it was Ashton Kutcher who said it, which I know you don't normally think of Ashton Kutcher as, you know, as involved with financial advice, but one thing he said really made sense to me. He was saying that when I choose my investments, I just go to the places that I like to go to. If I like their product, I invest in their company. And he's made like hundreds of millions of dollars investing in things like Starbucks.
Right. And it follows my basic rule. Does the company make a thing? Is that thing good?
Yeah.
You know?
He was just saying, if you go to a store and you really like, you know, eating at a place or going and buying your clothes from a place, go check out their stock. And if you think it's a good product, if it's something that you buy, then go invest in that.
I mean, check out their fundamentals, of course. But
yeah,
on average, millionaires invest 20% of their household income every year. So their wealth isn't just measured by the amount they make, but by how much they've saved and invested over time. So the earlier you start, the better. Next, oh, if you're
happy. Add one thing?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just want to add one thing about investing. If you write a letter to these companies and say, I was considering investing in your company, I wanted to know if you had any information that would be useful to me, they'll send you a packet with like books about investing in their company.
Yes, they will.
For free. You just write them a little letter and you get this package in the mail with Venn diagrams and pie charts. It's very Donald Trump. It's glorious.
Oh, I need to have that clip where he's like, part of the beauty of me is that I'm very rich.
Stupid.
I love that clip. That's a glorious clip.
I love his little chart that they showed, and he was showing the people the chart, but he had like churn it around and look at it to like remind himself what was there. Oh God, Donald.
Now, if you're content with just a steady paycheck, probably never going to get rich. Average people choose to get paid based on time, a steady salary or an hourly rate. While rich people choose to get paid based on results, and they're typically self-employed. Now, I don't have a problem with this, but look, a lot of times you have to start hourly and put in your dues, get familiar with an industry before you start to strike off on your own. The dumbest thing you can do is say, I've got a great idea. I'm going to start a company, because I'm a strong supporter in people learning that industry. And so if you really want to do something and you're passionate about it, I consider hourly work to be a great learning tool. But you have to have a plan for how to break out of that over time.
Yeah, I could see that, especially if you're trying to be rich. If that's your goal in life is to, you know, become a millionaire, you ain't going to do it, you know, on a teacher's salary.
No, but I've like, for example, one of my favorite television shows that I watch on a very regular basis is called Hotel Impossible. And Anthony,
I've never even heard of it.
Okay, it is a glorious television show. I love Hotel Impossible. This guy who spent his life, his whole career managing fantastic hotels, he decided to strike off on his own and start a consulting company. Okay. So his name is Anthony Mocuri, and he goes to failing hotels, hotels that are not making any money. And they're like, I have no idea why I'm losing so much money. I mean, it's like, every single month, it's like going down the drain. I just don't get it. I thought hotels make money. And Anthony shows up and he's like looking around and he's like, okay, this is wrong. That's wrong. What did you do in your lobby? And when he talks to the owners, he asks them, have you ever done anything in the hotel business? Have you ever worked at a hotel? And all of these people almost always say no. I worked in a car company. I earned my money and I wanted to buy a business, so I bought a hotel. And he says, what makes you think that you can run a hotel if you've never even worked in one?
Right.
So, you know, I've been at front desk. I've done maintenance. I've been in breakfast. I've been in, done even some housekeeping stuff, done laundry. I mean, if there's a job in the hotel industry, believe me, I've done it. Maybe I haven't done it very long, or maybe I've only done it like a day or two to help out, but I've done it. I know every aspect of the hotel industry because I've worked in it. And if I own a hotel, I can guarantee you I'm going to be a successful hotel owner because it's something I've done.
Well, and effectively what you're saying is that educating yourself is a large key to success. Whether you're gaining that education through experience or gaining it through school, I mean, I'm sure Mr. Millionaire ain't going to tell people, oh, if you go to college, you're never going to be rich, you know, because it's just simply not true. You know, there are a lot of people that have gone to college and made it big time. So it's like, if you are going to take that time to educate yourself, it's vital to success. And you're in your position, your hourly or in some cases salaried work, was your education at the same time if you do go on to purchase a hotel.
That's right. Exactly. And so in my opinion, you got to, if you, once you buy your own business, it's got to be something that you're passionate about. You can't be pursuing someone else's dreams. You have to pursue your own dreams and know your business. People think that they, you know, oh, I took a course in hotel management. I'm ready to own a hotel. Idiots.
Dude, okay, I got a question, and this might derail the conversation, and I'm sorry. But I'm wondering, I hear a lot, follow your own dream, pursue your passion. If you work at something you love, you'll never work a day in your life, and all those stupid, cheesy phrases. What if you don't know what you love? What if you're like, if you don't have a passion?
Well, then you get a job and you figure out what your passion is. Because like for example, if you want to open a childcare center, you should probably go work in a childcare center and see if you like it. You know, yeah. I don't think this thing is talking about you should never work for a paycheck. Working for a paycheck, if you go to school, you're paying to go to school. If you go work in an industry that you think you might enjoy, they're paying you to be educated, yeah. Right? And the last one here is you don't have goals for your money. When you're working a job and you have you have goals for your education because you want to do something in this industry, and you've got goals for your money. As you make it, you're investing it, and you say, I'm going to open my own childcare center. I'm going to buy my own hotel. You know, you've got goals for what you'll do when you reach there. I had a dream for a very long time of owning my own home, and I concentrated on it. I had goals for the money that I saved, and I was able to use that to get what I want. And if I want a hotel, which guess what, I do, I've got goals for the money that I make. I don't get just it. Blow it on everything. So if you don't...
I mean, I hope you don't blow it. I mean, we don't know how many germs are on that money.
All right, no. That's a better one.
All right. All right. I like it.
Yeah, I hit the wrong button there. I'm sorry. So if you don't follow those things, or if you do the wrong thing there, Steve Siebold says, these are all signs that you will never be rich. We seem to be doing a lot of long segments, so we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with some people who followed none of those rules and just stumbled somehow backwards into filthy riches. So we'll hear all about that.
Punks.
Hate those guys. We'll be right back here on the English Express Radio Podcast.
Hey, could you please call me a taxi?
Okay, you're a taxi.
You're listening to the English Express Radio Podcast.
Hi, I'm Cliff from the English Express Radio Podcast. If you need help with an art or video project, we know somebody who's got the proven experience to make any project come to life. Visit facebook.com/ Tara Fox the Artist and take a look at some of her art, film, and video work and graphic design. Years of experience means she can capture your vision and produce the perfection you're looking for. So market your stuff the right way and visit facebook.com/ Tara Fox the Artist.
Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the English Express Radio Podcast, the greatest podcast ever produced.
Whoa, wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Surprisingly Awesome?
No.
Okay. The English Express Radio Podcast, the greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. Visit us online at theenglishexpress.com and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron.
If you don't love us, your sister will. You're listening to the English Express Radio Podcast.
Welcome back to the English Express Radio Podcast. Download our show online at theenglishexpress.com. Now let's get straight to it. Have you ever lost something that you liked?
Like my glasses in a lake? Yeah.
And did you ever go try to find them?
Yeah, I dived down for the next hour and a half because I knew mom and dad would tan my hide for losing a $200 pair of glasses. Unfortunately, I went home only able to see halfway, and I also got a big red bum.
Well, in November of 1992, a farmer living near the village of Hoxney in Suffolk, England, he lost a hammer in one of his fields. Oh, no. So he asked his friend Eric Laws if he could borrow his metal detector, cheerio.
Eric, I need to find the hammer.
I need a hammer, Eric.
I need to find you.
You have a metal detector and I need it. So while looking for his hammer, Laws happened upon something else of interest. Oh, hello. 24 bronze coins, 565 gold coins, and 14,000 silver coins, plus hundreds of gold and silver spoons, jewelry, and statues dating back to the Roman Empire.
You are kidding. That is nuts.
In his fields.
Trying to find a hammer. What a lucky find.
As required by British law, the so-called Hoxney hoard was reported to local authorities who declared it a treasure trove. Look, I think I would be go. I would go the Smaug route in The Hobbit.
Just sit on it all day.
Hey, it's not. Look, you can't sell it because they're gonna know. But I would like hide it in my basement and just protect it with my shotgun and be like, nobody touch my hoard.
Here's my thing. He found it on his land, right? So wasn't it his?
According to British law, it is legally the property of Great Britain. However, the government is required to pay fair market value for a treasure trove like this one, meaning the farmer-in-law split £1.75 million.
Whew.
So they still have to pay him, but you can't keep the treasure. So it's now on permanent display in the British Museum, drawing thousands of people every year.
So what's the conversion rate for pounds to dollars?
A lot. I don't know. It's like $1.43 for a pound, something like that. The question I have is, did they ever find the hammer?
Right? I mean, did he keep looking, or at that point, did he just give up on the hammer?
I would keep looking. I'm like, okay, let's put this to the side. We still have not found our hammer yet.
Yeah. Oi, open your pockets. Grab this up. Now let's go find the hammer.
All right. In Arkansas, 1924, W.O. Basham was just walking around and found a 40-carat diamond, raw diamond, uncut.
Yeah, I hear that that's actually pretty easy to do if you just go peruse Africa for a while. There's, like, literally diamonds everywhere.
He wasn't in Africa. He was in Arkansas.
Oh, well, that's kind of weird.
It's now the Crater of Diamonds State Park. It happens to be sitting on top of a volcanic pipe, and it shoots out diamonds. And this is the only diamond site in the world that's open to the public. And the park's policy is you find it, you keep it, no matter how valuable it is. So people go out there and do it. It was cut down to 12.5 carats and sold for about $800,000 in today's money.
Not bad. Yeah, I hear the best time to go to that park is after a big rainstorm.
Oh, yeah. And I heard the diamonds out there, the raw diamonds, don't look like diamonds. It's not like you see a sparkly thing on the ground.
Exactly. And they have to be refined and cut and blah, blah, blah. But, if you go after a rainstorm, erosion sometimes uncovers them and you can start spotting ones that haven't been found yet, you know?
Absolutely. Now, have you ever heard the stories about people who go to like garage sales or thrift stores and they buy something and it turns out to be like stupidly valuable?
Oh, yeah. I've heard of stuff like, we went to a Deseret Industries. It was a Goodwill. We went to a Goodwill in Oregon and we bought this $3 grab bag of toys for the kids. And when we brought it home or to the cabin when we were up there and I showed Valerie, she freaked out and she's like, do you know what this is? And I'm like, they're animals, right? And she's like, no. This has like, there are these little animal characters that are like hand painted and they're like $45 a piece. And we had this entire plastic bag full of them.
Wow.
For $3. Yeah.
Well, Michael Sparks was visiting a Nashville thrift store. He bought a candle holder, a set of salt and pepper shakers, and a yellowed print of the Declaration of Independence. You know, one of those novelty ones that's like all framed up. And he paid, the whole thing cost him $2.48. And he went home. Well, he took the Declaration of Independence print out of the frame and started thinking maybe this actually might not be a print. It might be a little older than he initially thought because of the texture. So he hopped on the internet to do a little research and realized that he had purchased one of only 200 official copies of the Declaration of Independence commissioned by John Quincy Adams in 1820. And only 35, whoa, only 35 had been found intact. And he had number 36.
Awesome.
$500,000 he got at auction.
That's what's up. Oh. Best $3 he ever spent.
That's what I'm saying. Why can't I ever get that?
Well, I guess you probably have to go to a thrift store once in your life in order to get it.
I browse them, but I never get the good stuff, you know?
Yeah. All it's because right. I'm usually buying like dart guns and gym shorts. And I don't think any of those are going to profit me $500,000.
Have you ever heard of Jackson Pollock?
Mississippi?
Nope. Jackson Pollock. It's a guy's name.
Oh, no, no. I've never heard of him. That's maybe another, I've heard of him.
This is another thrift store story. Okay. So Terry Horton in 1992, she's a retired truck driver, went to her local thrift store just to buy a depressed friend a funny gift. Okay. You know how it is. Your buddy's all sad and you're like, oh, I'll buy him something funny, but I don't want to spend a lot of money. So I'll go down to the thrift store. So she found this huge painting, 66 inches by 47 inches. And she thought it was pretty funny because it was so damn ugly. And the thrift store said $8. She goes, for this ugly piece of crap? So she haggled it down to $5. And her friend, in the end, her friend didn't even want it. She thought it was ugly, too. And she's like, you know, yeah, really, really funny, friend, you know, for this piece of junk. And so she's like, plus it won't even fit through the door of my trailer. So Terry took it home and tried to sell it.
She lived in a trailer. It's like a 5 foot tall painting.
Well, that's why she was depressed, probably. Wow. So Terry takes it home and tries to unload it at a garage sale she was throwing that weekend. When a local art teacher came by and said, oh my God, that looks like a Jackson Pollock. In response, she goes, who the is Jackson Pollock? Well, it turns out this guy paints crazy paintings. He just like throws paint, but he does it in such a way that it's like really unique. And so she thinks it really could be one and worth over $100 million. But due to the painting's lack of verifiable history, it's really hard to prove. But fingerprint evidence shows that it matches one in Pollock's studio, but even the fingerprint evidence has been disputed, so she hasn't sold it yet. But it very well could be a Jackson Pollock, but her battle with the art world elite became the subject of a 2006 documentary called, appropriately, Who the Blank is Jackson Pollock? So.
That's an awesome quote.
Last thing. How often do you change your password?
Whenever I make a new account, basically. And I don't often have an account.
Do you enjoy changing your password? Do you have a usual one that you use?
So when in my college, they make you get a new password like every 8 weeks, every 16 weeks, they force you to change it. But you can't repeat the same password.
I hate that. I add a number. I have a rotating number on the end.
Oh, sorry. I guess we lagged. Did I get cut off?
No. You're fine. I just add a number on the end of my usual password. Like yeah, 81, that's 82, 83.
I can't repeat my password within the last 8 times, so I just have a number on the end that I just change, and other than that, it's the same password.
That's what I do. Well, a recent survey commissioned by social software services say almost 40% of Americans would rather clean a toilet or come up with a plan for world peace than think of an entirely new online password. And that's because
That's a little extreme.
40% also believe it's easier to solve world peace than remember all their passwords.
Just write them down in a book that you keep right next to your computer. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks for joining us here on the English Express Radio Podcast. Again, join us online, theenglishexpress.com. We'll see you next week.